Well, today, if you didn't know it, is Earth Day. We know the planet's heating up and that if drastic action isn't taken immediately, the consequences could be disastrous. Just Stop Oil is an organisation you might have heard of. It was most recently in the news last weekend when one of its members disrupted the World Snooker Championships in Sheffield, and there are fears it may interrupt the London Marathon tomorrow and indeed the coronation in a couple of weeks' time of Britain's King Charles. Amy Rose Friel O'Donnell is a young Irish woman who works with that group, Just Stop Oil. She's been telling me about how she became involved in the environmental movement.
I have a bit of a background, I guess, in the environmental part. My mum was always very into permaculture and horticulture, and then my dad was very involved in the Shell to Sea movement in Mayo. He did a documentary called The Pipe, but I guess it wasn't until I was about 17 and the school strikes for climate kind of came through the mainstream media, and this was the first time that I realised, oh God, this is really something that's going to affect me. This is going to affect Ireland, this is going to affect my mum, this is going to affect everybody. That's when I kind of started educating myself more on the actual facts.
And so most people this week, the Just Stop Oil organisation, would have got into the public consciousness by the World Snooker Championships being disrupted with throwing orange powder on the table. So who are Just Stop Oil? What do they want?
So Just Stop Oil are a group of ordinary people who basically want to fight back against the inaction of the government. Mums, their dads, their teachers, they're really anybody. And they're just people that are so sick of the same wealthy people capitalizing off the loss of the poor. You know, like, this isn't just a climate fight. This is, you know, a fight for social justice, racial justice, class justice, everything. And we are doing that through civil resistance and through community.
And in terms of taking a high-profile action like that, and who is affected by it at the World Snooker Championships, I mean, you mentioned the global 1%, the billionaires, the board members of large fossil fuel companies. There weren't many of them sitting watching the World Snooker Championships. So how do you justify targeting those people's night out when the real target is the executives of global fuel corporations?
You make such a valid point. But the fact of the matter is, those working class people are going to be the people affected the most by the climate crisis. Because unfortunately, when this really starts hitting the fan, and when floods start taking to the roads, and when, you know, food is getting off the shelf, the governments are not going to care about these working class people. So we need to really sound the alarm now so that they can fight back.
Tell us about some of the other actions you've been involved in. You've changed yourself to oil terminals. You've been involved. Were you involved in the M25 protest as well? Give us an insight into what other actions you've been involved in and what kind of preparation you have to do for them.
Yeah, so I was involved with the M25 actions. I'm actually going to court for that in about a year or two, and I'm looking at about, you know, I won't get the max, but the max is pretty hefty. I'm not going to say, but it's quite a few years. So you're right. A lot of preparation comes into taking these kind of actions. I took part in, you know, like 2 week kind of trainings, like on and off. I went to resilience training, which was basically building up how to handle the stress of, you know, public backlash or the backlash of police. But not only that, I went through a lot of physical training and safety training, because the thing is, when you're up on that gantry, you know, no matter how much I care about myself, I was so worried about endangering other people. You know, you drop something off that gantry at the wrong angle, you hit a car, you hit something else, you know, you could be seriously putting someone's life in danger. So we made sure to train for multiple weeks to make sure we could put ourselves in safety, put the police in safety, and the cars in safety.
And you know, you obviously, you've a criminal record at this stage because of some of what you've been involved in, which shows, I suppose, certainly a level of dedication to it. Would you be concerned that this might come back to bite you in the future? Say, for example, you've concerns there that you might be jailed. You feel it's a price worth paying, do you?
Well, it's not really a question of a price worth paying, because I have made a very clear decision in my head that there's only really two directions this is going to go. Either we win this fight, against the climate crisis, amazing, okay? I am proud of what I've done, I regret nothing. Or we lose the fight and we are dead, and I will lose everything I love, and I will lose my home, and that criminal record, that whatever backlash from, you know, the press, the backlash from my family, none of that will matter, because I know I've done what I could.
Is it fun? Is it fulfilling? On when is it kind of us?
Personally, fulfilling, 100%. I have, for a long time, you know, I struggled with a lot of, like, mental health issues, and I thought it was, like, me. I thought I was crazy. And then meeting all these people and realizing that me not fitting in to a world that is only built for a small amount of people is completely normal. We are not supposed to live this way. We are not supposed to have this constant idea of growth and growth, no matter who is getting hurt. So joining Just Stop Oil and just joining civil resistance in general has made me connect to a community that promotes love and promotes looking after each other and promotes so much more than just like money and more and more and more. I've met some of the most beautiful people ever. I have had people wait out in the rain outside of police stations for 6 hours with a warm meal, with a bed. It's just, it's honestly amazing.
You've done a lot of your work in the UK. You're off to Germany next. You're taking the show on the road, as it were.
Yes, I am. I am. Basically, I'm trying to go to Germany because I kind of want to get involved in more on-the-ground activism work. I think what's happening here in London is amazing. But unfortunately, dealing with this type of civil resistance has had quite a strain on, like, my own mental capacity. So I'm trying to maybe see about maybe living in a cooperative community, whether that's a tree house or, you know, a squat or something like that. Well, I'm still in civil resistance, but it's very hard to convince people to care. And we are getting there and we are winning the fight. But as a young person, I can only convince people to care for so long.
And that was Amy Rose Friel O'Donnell from Just Stop Oil speaking to me earlier. Well, still with me in studio, our Minister of State of the Department of Foreign Affairs, Sean Fleming, Independent TD for Wexford, Verona Murphy, and Kian O'Callaghan of the Social Democrats. Sean Fleming, to you first. You've been to countries where climate change is having a very real effect on the ground. I think most recently, was it Malawi?
Yes.
So when you come back home and you're talking to constituents about sustainable living and cutting down on carbon emissions, you've seen the effects close up. What do your constituents say back to you?
Okay, I think everybody now understands the issue of climate change, which wouldn't have been the case before now. And today is Earth Day. And already on my way up here today, I saw several people out in the rain, litter picking, keeping their area straight, picking up plastic bottles. That's a practical contribution in terms of reducing pollution and increasing the biodiversity in Ireland. And the advice I would be most interested to hear in the programme or a programme like this would be the Irish Children and Young People's Assembly, who issued a report today for Earth Day, highlighting all the things that they have done, the devices of children and young people should be listened to. And I think most people would like to hear what they have said. And in truth, I think what we've been listening to is actually a diversion to the real issue of climate change, and it doesn't win any support for climate change.
All right, well, we'll come back to that in a moment. But the chair of the Climate Change Advisory Council, Mary Donnelly, was on Countrywide with Philip Boucher-Hayes earlier. And she said, in terms of making a contribution, she said taxpayers are going to foot the bill when fines start coming down the tracks for a lack of compliance and meeting our emissions targets. She put a figure of $8 billion on it, and she thinks that should be spent now to get emissions down and help the just transition, supporting farmers and households, moving away from fossil fuels and transport and the like. It's a compelling argument, isn't it?
It is, and I think most people agree with that. We should be acting now and not waiting.
But we have a large surplus. Is it $16 billion of a surplus?
Well, expected in 16 perhaps next year.
Right.
Yeah.
So get spending.
Well, actually, I think there's a lot of investment going into climate change issues around the country now. And what I would find as a rural deputy, I think the idea of talking about fines and penalties is the punishment way to bring people around. You bring people with you, you show them the benefit. If you start the argument saying you're going to be fined and you're going to be paid, or you're going to have to pay if you don't do this, that's the way of people getting back up. And I would appeal to
Well, wouldn't it be more accurate to tell them... Wouldn't it be more accurate to tell them you're going to end up paying and people are going to end up fined if the supports aren't in place to mitigate that? That's a more accurate way to frame it.
If action isn't taken, and
further down the tracks people end up paying, it won't be their fault, will it? It's the absence of support that was provided to them.
And I think it's far more important to bring the people with you rather than punish them at the end of it by higher taxation.
You can't
bring
the people with you. Both sides of your mouth, Sean. I mean, when you say bring the people with you, like, there's clearly a massive urban-rural divide when it comes to climate change. Yesterday, and only yesterday, Minister Eamon Ryan wrote to the Dublin Port Authority to voice his objection to an expansion plan, a plan that they have spent millions on to put through the planning process. And only, I mean, he was aware of this for the past at least 3 years, if not 8. And yesterday he has decided. Now, this is an expansion plan where the EPA year on year has conducted survey after survey and report after report. And these are the fines we're paying because we have exceeded NOx emissions to a level of where it affects lung health. NOx emissions in the
This is nitrous oxide.
Nitrous
associated
oxide,
with diesel.
Which affect lung health. It's caused by congestion. The NOx is the emissions at turnover level of a vehicle. It's not the same as if you're driving from Dublin to Cork. So the reality is that we have farmers out in the country today sowing food. They're sequestering. They're garnering their hedges. Their hedgerows, 6,000 kilometres.
Well, just you come from a haulage background. You used to be head of the Irish Road Haulage Association. And what is the biggest single support that hauliers could get from government to reduce emissions in that sector?
The same thing that they've been asking for 10 years, a subsidy to renew their trucks to the cleanest engine available, which is a Euro 6 engine that has an AdBlue additive. And the emissions from those vehicles are the equivalent to a 1.6 petrol car.
And what's the answer they've got from government?
No, constantly. No, the government aren't interested. If government wanted to solve the congestion on the M50, they would reinstitute plans to put in a ring road like every major city.
Right.
Every major city in Europe, this is important, are moving their city-centred ports to the suburbs and the regions so as that they can disperse with congestion. And that's something that we're doing the total opposite with. So the farmers who are, the narrative from government is that farming is bad and farming has the highest carbon emissions. Methane isn't carbon emission. Methane is measured incorrectly in this country. It's been admitted in this studio by a former environmental minister.
That's solid defence.
Was Minister Richard Bruton with your colleagues. He admitted that there is an issue with how we measure methane.
Right, okay.
We can
come back to you, Cian O'Callaghan.
They're not getting the benefit of the sequestration.
Yeah, I think if we're going to tackle climate change, we can't have, urban versus rural divides or different class divides on this, because climate change affects all of us. And that means if we're going to tackle it, it means bringing everyone with us. And there is a huge government surplus at the moment. We're going to tackle climate change. I absolutely applaud people out litter picking today. They're doing it in my constituency as well. It's great. It's brilliant community work. That is not going to tackle climate change. We need the billions of euro of surplus that the government are sitting on at the moment invested into retrofitting so that people can get their homes warmer, use less energy. We need to invest into solar panels, wind energy. You see Scotland producing virtually all of their energy now off renewables and wind energy. They sometimes even have to shut off their wind turbines because the national grid in the UK hasn't been invested enough in it to cope with the wind energy they're able to get in. There's so much that we need to be doing. Instead, our carbon emissions are going up every year. We're missing our targets. And in the meantime, your average regular household is struggling to put food on the table and to heat their home. Whereas if the billions that are there available were put into retrofitting to make that affordable for people who can't afford to match the grants, then they could actually, be using less energy. And they'd have more money in their pocket. And that way we're bringing people with us rather than people seeing climate change as potentially an additional cost or something that's going to cost them money. It's something that can actually, if we tackle this properly, it can improve people's lives as well as us, being much more sustainable.
Sean Fleming, for somebody commuting a long distance to work, sitting in a diesel car that they don't have the money to change, going back to a house that needs retrofitting to reduce the energy bills, and with several other bills to pay, how does the government provide them with the upfront supports rather than, the partial supports to help them make the transition that they need to make? So if we look down the barrel of another couple of winters like the ones we've seen during the war in Ukraine, where fuel supply and everything else is constrained, that for very practical reasons, as well as for climate reasons, they can make that transition.
Yeah, well, just for example, this week, we passed legislation to abolish VAT on solar panels on houses. That saves, it might be small money to you, but it's €1,000 saved for every house that's gone. That was an actual practical measure to help people. Secondly, we're going to increase the grants for older houses, for vacant houses or derelict houses, because we have a housing shortage and they can be brought up to a more carbon neutral house if there's substantial grants. Somewhere at the moment, there's a range of grants from 30,000 to 50,000 on top of the retrofitting grants, but that's not sufficient for many of the older houses. And I think Minister will be bringing proposals to Cabinet on that in the next week or so to help especially the older houses that are out there to bring them up to standard.
Ciarán O'Connell, what do you make of that for a proposal? You're your party's housing spokesperson. Any of that work or does it need more front loading?
No, look, all of these measures help, but are they being done on the scale that are needed? No. And I you know, all of us would know in our constituencies, we'd meet people, you know, consistently, you know, people who are pensioners who are in older homes, colder homes, who are at home a lot of the time, are really struggling with heating bills, want to be able to retrofit their house, and the grants that are available and the matching funds that are needed for them are completely out of reach for them. So, you know, people in those situations who want to be able to retrofit their homes should be properly supported to be able to do it. And that's actually the part of our population that probably need a warmer home, a well-insulated home the most, and they're not able to do it. And like, what's been done in other European countries is they literally retrofit an entire scheme of housing at once, and you get economies of scale on that basis. I know that's been piloted here, but we should, you know, at this stage we should be moving beyond pilots and doing those kind of efficiencies.
By the way, Verona Murphy, you mounted a solid cry on behalf of the farming community there during your initial contribution. Michael Fitzmaurice is founding a party concentrating on, or he's at least is proposing that a party should be founded based on farmers and rural concerns. Has he had talks with you, and what's the upshot of that been?
And I'll come back to that. I will come back to it. I just want to address what Sean says about solar panels and VAT. Listen, it's piecemeal. What we need, we're a small country. We should have a high-speed electric train network across this country. 10,000 people leave my county every day in cars, be they on their fossil fuel. Regardless, we have a train in Wexford run by Irish Rail that doesn't leave in time for anybody to get to work. It doesn't leave at a time from Dublin to get you even to the boat in Rosslare. Right. It's a ridiculous notion that we would start.
It might link in with that train line, Eamon Ryan.
Well, it is
Dublin
a ridiculous
port.
Notion that we would start.
Irish Rail's train
drawing freight around the country is the dirtiest Euro 1 engine this country has, and there's not a word about it.
Okay, on Michael Fitzmaurice.
But I want to see measures like electric, high-speed electric
trains. And you've made that point. So
because we're going nowhere.
On Michael Fitzmaurice's
I have
party.
Had, in relation to Michael's recent media articles and forming parties, yeah. I've not discussed that. What I have had discussions
Did you discuss
over
it in 2014 and 2016 at any time? Or
I wasn't a politician then. Got elected.
He's not just talking to politicians.
No, with Michael Fitzmaurice, I wouldn't have known him.
Sure, okay. Yeah, sorry, so more recently?
No, I haven't. Not on that front, particularly starting a party. I would have attended in Athlone, and I was a guest speaker. I was asked to speak to a crowd in excess of 300 people who are of the belief that they don't have a voice, either in elected circles, particularly at government level, and within the current farming organisations. Michael was there, he chose not to speak, and I think the reality is all of the inconsistencies that I'm pointing out, the double talking out of both sides of their mouth, people in rural Ireland have not got the change they required in balance. And that's balance in the region.
Would you join a party if it leveraged those concerns into the programme for government?
I think
then?
As an independent, I believe I'm quite effective as an opposition member.
Not yet.
I know what I'm saying is it can always be considered, but at this point I'm saying not yet.
Right, you're open to a good offer perhaps.
I'm always open to something that would improve my position as an elected representative on behalf of the people who elected me.